from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
That's being able to do the same thing over and over and do it at a high level and still have that juice and fire about yourself, whether it's in practice or in game. Having that juice, that fire to, lit up under you, whether it's because of things in your past, whether it's just because you're here and you love ball, whether it's, all of the above. Just being able to have that fire up under you. All of OTAs, training camp, all the 17 games.
Yeah. Maybe 20.
Just being able to have that competitive fire, and keep, I guess, adding wood to the fire throughout the throughout the year.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is Caleb Williams talking to Dan Wiederer. Excellent stuff. And you hear him talking about the way he kind of looks at this season and his competitive stamina, what that means to him in order to continue to be as good as he wants to be throughout the course of a 17-game slate.
Really interesting stuff. The more you hear from Caleb Williams, the more you want to hear from Caleb Williams. Thought it was very interesting that in that interview, he revealed that after the season, he talked to some of his people who got him in touch with some of Brady's people, and all of a sudden he was exchanging texts and calls with Tom Brady. And then he was contacting Aaron Rodgers. And then he talked about, obviously Kobe Bryant's influence on him being a L.A. guy, and then Michael Jordan as well, but the age difference being something that he wasn't able to see Jordan play. But, Mully, we talked yesterday, might have mentioned it, about the Tim Grover connection. That was interesting, knowing Tim Grover.
Yes.
And what he had to say. And he had a meeting with Tim Grover.
Right. Went to dinner with him, right?
Yeah. And this is how it sounded. Caleb Williams talking about meeting with Tim Grover.
Since you mentioned Kobe and Jordan, did you have a meeting or relationship with Tim Grover?
I have met with Tim before, yes.
Okay.
I have met with Tim.
He obviously knows the MJ Kobe mindset. When have you met with him, and what did you take out of those meetings?
Yeah, so I've met with Tim. I met with Tim over dinner one time. Just
here, right?
Yeah, here. Trying to figure out what the hell did MJ do? How did he win? How did he become so dominant? And obviously things are going to be different because it's a different sport and trainings are different and all these other things. But there's always a certain thing that you can always connect to, your sport, whether it's F1, like I said, basketball, whether it's other football players, whether it's, whatever the case may be, there's always something that you can kind of connect, to your sport and use. So
what'd you learn from him about?
Yeah. So obviously, MJ, his mental of like not turning off, his mental of like, and this is, I'm trying to think of what he said exactly, but basically, the mental, and it goes back to the competitive stamina, but it's just not turning off. And then, there's a point where Tim said that he didn't like certain things. It's kind of also kind of what Kobe did after his first year. There wasn't certain things that he liked, certain things that he was doing. He wasn't strong enough. He wasn't fast enough. He didn't know the game well enough. And so he, just, it honestly came down to putting in the work. It came down to having that competitive energy about himself, that he wasn't good enough at the time, and he was going to get better, and he wanted to get better, and he wanted to be the best. So, he worked at it, kept going, and obviously he ended up getting 6 rings out of it. So,
okay.
Yeah, he did all right.
Yeah, I enjoy the research he's done and what he's kind of looking for there, and I think it's very interesting. you know, tells you a lot about kind of what his aspirations are and how great he does want to be.
Greatness.
You know. Yeah, that's what he's
chasing. He aspires to greatness in Chicago, in a city that appreciates it and recognizes it in guys like him. When you were around Jordan and the Bulls, you know Tim Grover well. How would you describe the impact Tim Grover had on Michael Jordan?
Well, I think it was a really important, necessary impact on Jordan. You know, and I got to be careful how I articulate this because I don't want to leave anybody hanging about anything they've told me about different things. But I think that Michael recognized that he needed to be stronger. He needed to be in better condition physically. It was a very different era, and it was a lot more physical. And Jordan did not like working out necessarily with his teammates. He liked to have an aura about himself. And I'm not sure that he wanted everybody to see him. I mean, he was the most
solitude
guy in the world.
The intensity that he found by himself working out alone.
And I think, you know, I remember going out to dinner one time with Dan Hampton. And I was with a guy, and he's a Bear fan, and just was asking Hampton questions that I would never have asked him, just as a fan of the teams in those eras. And he asked Dan Hampton, what was Walter Payton like? Is it true that, you know, the whole thing with the Hill and all that stuff? Mm-hmm. What was it like with him working out with you guys? And Dan said, well, Walter didn't like working out with us. He didn't necessarily go into the weight room with the team like all the defensive linemen went into the weight room together. You know, like Mongo be lifting a house over his head. They'd all be doing their thing. And Walter worked out separate from the team in order to help with that aura of invincibility mm-hmm. that he developed. And he did his own thing and ran the Hill and did a lot of his stuff away
on his
from
own.
Other teammates. And that's kind of what Michael Jordan did.
Right.
Because Michael Jordan did not want to show weakness, and he didn't want people to know, like Horace Grant was, you know, really devoted himself in the weight room. I don't think Michael would have wanted Horace to know that he could outlift him. So Michael was doing his own thing with his own guy, separate from the team, in order to maintain this aura of invincibility that he had when he was on the floor, that he could score on anyone and do anything.
So
Payton did that too.
Yeah, and whiteboarding it for people who don't know Tim Grover, personal trainer.
Yes.
Who was the individual trainer of Michael Jordan back in the day. Still now has been on the scene. He also worked with Kobe Bryant. He worked with Dwayne Wade. He's the CEO of Attack Athletics. He's well-known in Chicago, well-known in the sports industry, and he's somebody that Caleb Williams sought out, the way it was described, to pick his brain, to understand what went into developing that greatness. And I think that's a great way to put it, that aura of invincibility, which sometimes comes by being alone, being with just yourself and being self-motivated.
But like breaking your hump, like as much as anybody, just not showing that to others in order to kind of create this aura, mystery,
that's
whatever
self-motivation.
Way you wanna,
it's outworking people and not needing an audience to do so.
But I don't want to make it sound like it's some weird ego trip or it's some, I'm just saying.
No, it's not. No, I don't think so.
I hope I'm articulating this correctly.
No, you did. No, I think that's true. And that's why I asked, because I do think people wonder about certain, you know, when you have, that's what I would want to tap into. If I were Caleb Williams coming into Chicago and having the things said about me and knowing what I'm capable of achieving, and let's face it, we have compared his arrival, and if he has success, to Michael Jordan. His success would be Jordan-esque if he's able to win a Super Bowl as the Bears quarterback, and he's the reason why. So I give him credit for seeking out somebody who was part of that.
I think one other element here, I remember having Tim on and talking to him about different guys that he's worked out with. And he worked out with, you'll know the kid's name. Who's the high school kid they drafted? Remember they drafted the two high school kids, the one from Chicago.
Eddie Curry. Yeah.
Couldn't get Eddie Curry out of bed.
Right.
Couldn't, like Eddie Curry, you would have to dynamite the bed to get him to get out of bloody bed.
Not a model of self-motivation.
That's what I'm saying. So Tim has worked out with guys mm-hmm. that were like, you know, Jordan would get up in the morning and play like 36 holes of golf before he even started his day. He was nuts.
Well, that was the competitive stamina he's talking about.
He was also like a morning workout guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was getting a lot of stuff done at different hours that people were sleeping. You see what I'm saying? It's just a totally different animal as opposed to other guys that, for whatever reason, either don't have that personal push or need to be kind of, you know, like almost you got to be forced into doing your workout as opposed
but it's all relative.
To voluntarily doing
it. It's all relative because guys like Eddie Curry, no offense, but guys like that are trying to reach a certain level so they can break through to, say, being above average or being more than they are. Exactly. Guys like Michael Jordan, who are in a rare class, guys
wanna
like
be the best ever.
And
that's what Caleb Williams.
They want to be the best ever.
That's why he's doing what he's doing.
That's why he's doing it. That's why he sounds the way he sounds. And I just can't get past, and it's worth pointing out again, and every time we hear from the young man, he's 22 years old. And the way that he sounds in terms of being relatable, down-to-earth, self-motivated, there isn't an ounce of prima donna that's coming through anything that he has said. Anything that he has done, the reports of what he was like coming into Chicago.
It's ridiculous.
Totally ridiculous. So where we are now based on what we thought a year ago.
You know, I mean, honestly, every time you hear him talk, you like it. Every time, you know, you find out that he's done something, you like hearing about it. I just think that if we had more of this information earlier,
right.
I don't think there would ever have been any kind of question as
no doubt.
To what they could or couldn't. You know, there's a reason that they settled on him and gave him as much as they've given him in terms of control over the team, the whole bit. This guy is the kind of guy you want running your team. This is the kind of guy you want as a player. This is a high character, very ambitious young man.
This is the guy you want as a spokesman for your team, for your organization, and you want him to think big. And as he told Dan Weider in the sit-down, he has big goals.
I set them because it also helps me to be able to keep going. It also helps me to be able to, you know, have something to strive for that I feel that I can't reach right now.
Yeah.
I don't think that I can reach, you know, the goals that I've set for myself, and I know I can't right now because it's actually impossible. It's actually impossible of having some of the, you know, accomplish some of the goals that I have set. So, it's a way to help me mentally to keep going. It's a way to keep that competitive fire and stamina that I talked about earlier, and then also just have an understanding of the position that I'm in now. I'm not there. I'm not good enough to be there yet. But it's also I'll be there. I'll get there. Kind of mindset.
How much is fearlessness a part of that?
Yeah, you got to be in a way fearless. I would think that, you know, to have those and set those goals, you got to be confident in yourself. You got to have all these other things, but you got to be fearless be able to go get them. You got to push yourself. You got to be able to push yourself mentally, physically. You know, those days where you throw up, those days where your legs and your back and your body hurts and aches. You know, just to be able to get up and go again and be fearless is super important.
Can't relate to that at all, but I get it.
But here's the thing that stood out to me about that. Great. He has big goals. Everybody has high expectations this year. He said, I'm not good enough to be there yet. I've been surprised. This relates to what we were just talking about. I think I've been most struck by how much humility he brought to town. That how grounded he seems to be in, yet he can have these high expectations. He can talk about wanting to have dinner with Michael Jordan's trainer to find out how great he can be and what it takes to be that unique figure in a sports city, and yet understand that he's got a long way to go. I don't know that a lot of guys who come into the league, in any league, at that stage of their life, understand where they are and what they haven't accomplished yet. So often we deal with people who think that they have they deserve so much more because of their status or because they think they have accomplished more than they actually have. Caleb Williams doesn't reflect that at all.
No. Listen, what's extraordinary, just listening to him talk about this stuff, is the idea that he aspires to a level of greatness that has only been achieved by guys like Tom Brady or Michael Jordan or whomever it might be, the best of the best. And he wants to know how they've gone about doing it because that's what his aspiration is. That is extraordinary. And there's not, a lot of people can have those kind of goals, but you have to have a touch of magic to you, a touch of genius to you, to be able to pursue it in the same way. Because of how good he has been and how ambitious he is, he can get Tim Grover to go. I'm just saying.
I know.
Tim Grover's worked out with Obama, with a member of Alexei Gilinas, the basketball player. Like, he's worked with guys that aren't necessarily professional athletes or great athletes, but have a desire to do. But
leaders, driven people.
But also people that have access to a guy of his level of training. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
I would like to go see this doctor, but my guy can't get me in to see him because he's only seeing the best of the best. You know what I mean?
It's the Mayo Clinic of personal trainers.
That's what I'm saying.
And I think when you have access to that, it reflects your ambition to be more than just above average, more than just a great for your franchise. You want to be one of the greatest ever.
Exactly.
And when you're trying to access guys who have been around Michael Jordan,
right,
when you're texting Tom Brady,
when you're looking to Tom Brady to get dietary information, like, what is Tom known for? Right. He's the guy.
That's what I mean, though. You're striking the balance, which is right, very impressive, between understanding how unique your career and your life could be with the knowledge and the humility of understanding you haven't accomplished anything yet and what it takes to get there.
Right.
I think it's pretty rare that we see guys with that kind of self-awareness, because that to me is one of the hardest things for successful young athletes to bring into professional league or whatever sport, that self-awareness that helps them understand what it takes to become as good as they possibly could and to maximize their potential.
Every once in a while you hear about a guy who, is a young athlete who wants to be the best or wants to do something. And so he devotes himself to it and he makes himself into as good an athlete as he can be.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? He very close, very almost got there, did really well, maybe got into the major leagues, maybe had a cup of coffee somewhere. But then that was all that he could do.
He
maxed it out.
He maxed out.
When you have that touch of magic, that hint of greatness
special
to you, and then you devote yourself to it, that's how you become one of these players. That's how you become. You have to aspire to it in order to reach it. You have to be able to put yourself in a position where you're willing to do anything.
It's a great way to put it. It's a great context to have, especially today. Today, we're going to hear from around the league from teams that are going to make decisions, and there are going to be a lot of guys cut who reflect exactly what you said. They've maxed out their talent.
Yep.
They maybe were good enough to get a hard look at a training camp, not good enough to make an NFL roster. What the difference in Caleb Williams is, among other things, is that he has those special qualities. Athletically, he is the accuracy with his arm talent. He has the presence of mind where he processes things quickly at the line of scrimmage. But he also has clearly this sense of this desire,
yes,
this self-motivation that
how do I get better?
He's wired like an undrafted free agent.
Well,
and he had the skill set of a number one overall pick. And that's a great combination for the Bears.
No doubt about it. It's one thing to be able to roll to your left and throw that pass. That's unbelievable. That means that you've got the skill set to do it at the highest level known to man. It's another thing to then want to figure out how to maximize that. And that's what we're talking about with this kid. You're talking about a guy, He doesn't just want to be good or great at his job. He wants to be like the greatest, one of the best. That is how you become like a Pro Bowl, perennial Pro Bowl, Hall of Fame type talent. It's not having the ability alone.
Nope.
You know, if you are one of the greatest players ever to have a chance to do something, you then have to maximize it and get the most out of your gifts. And that seems to be what he's trying to
do. That's how you become generational. That's why we use that term.
It's unbelievable stuff. It's really fun.
Good stuff. How about we look at the Bears roster decisions when we come back?
Okay, we'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Taylor, really good edge guy in terms of the sack. He's had good sack production. We feel good about that. I think he brings a different skill set than we have out there in terms of the way he rushes. What I like most about him is his motor. He's got a great motor. He finishes. He needs some refinement at the top of the rush, which we'll work on. But he pursues and does the things, everything that everybody else does in the building that we expect and what we hold guys accountable to. Williams I had in Indianapolis. And he was a young guy back then, and I really commended him on his improvement he's made over the years. And he's done a really good job of refining his skill set and his pass rush and him playing the run. He does a really good job, uses his length really well, and he does the same thing. We don't bring guys in here that don't like to play hard.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Something to remember on cutdown day. you got to play hard. And I'll tell you what, to make an NFL roster, you better be pretty special.
You better
be able to
play
very hard.
You better be able to find that switch and flip it. The Turk looms. The Turk looms today for people all over the league. But
that's what you call the guy that it's his required job to tell you, hey, coach wants to see you, bring your playbook.
Coach in Hard Knocks wants to see you bring your playbook.
But they're not. Are they in the building?
I don't think so. I hope not. I find those scenes that from past Hard Knocks episodes
they got away from it because it was so depressing.
Yeah. It's tough to see somebody experiencing the lowest moment of their career.
Right.
Even though some people can't look away. I think, you're right. You can't look away. But you feel a little bit uneasy seeing that or having that kind of access, and you wonder about the fairness of it. That said, I wonder if that will be part of it today. I don't think they'll get that moment of getting the bad news, but there'll be some people getting some really bad news today and having to move on and deal with it. I don't know there'll be many surprises. I don't think that there'll be any names that we look at and say, whoa, did not see that one coming. We've talked about all the possibilities.
Yeah, we've talked about so many names and so many people that could see their career come to the end. It's hard to, this is in a lot of ways kind of one of the darker days on the NFL schedule. And people in the building, it's tough, man. It is really hard because there are guys that are, many a player has broken down crying when they've been cut. I know of some players that literally have gotten on their knees and begged to not be cut.
Right.
Every once in a while, it works. But it is the kind of thing where the desperation, imagine if you, you represent everyone in your life, right? You're the guy that kind of, and I'm using air quotes, you kind of made it. You're the guy from your small town, from your neighborhood that represents your parents, your family, whatever the personal connection is, your friends. That's our guy that got out and look what he's doing. And when you get cut, it is a public kind of embarrassment, humiliation. It's not just getting fired from a job. It's getting fired with your name in the paper. Everybody knows it. Everybody that you know, that you've met, that has connected to your story. It is just a really awful, horrible thing to go through. And when you've talked to players about it and what they've been through, and you've talked to, you know, guys that have had to tell them, hey, get the playbook, come in and see coach. When you talk to coaches about what that day is like, it's just an awful reality.
Yeah, it is. It's a tough situation for a lot of people today. I wonder what's going to happen with Larry Borum. Ankle injury puts his roster spot in jeopardy, especially when you consider what he's due to make because of the escalator in his deal. A $3 million salary this year for a swing tackle. That's a lot of money for a guy who is not a starter. So you wonder if Larry Borum makes this team. Velus Jones, another guy. You wonder if draft pick, the first offensive player selected by Ryan Poles, switched to running back. He has, you know, he has a skill set that is valued around the league. I don't know if he makes this team in a cameo role that we saw him in playing running back against in the final preseason game.
It's like the fifth running back in that.
Against the Chiefs. Yeah, but they're going to keep five or six.
I know, but that, like, you think about it. Think of the rotation of running backs. He was the third guy in that game, and the top three guys didn't play. I mean, I'm just saying.
Right.
So the running back thing, here's the problem with Velus Jones, is that he's not a running back. He's not a wide receiver. He is not a punt returner. He's just a kick returner. It's just, the more you talk about him, the more, but you, as you say, he's got speed. He ran a 4.31 at the combine.
Yeah, he's got speed, and that's hard to coach, and it's hard to defend.
Right.
The only reason I'm not even making the case for him. I'm talking about why I would understand keeping him is that in every game, let's face it, outcomes in the NFL these days come down to 3 to 5 plays a game. They can often, and if there are 3 to 5 plays where you identify a mismatch in the coverage, or there's a linebacker that you know that could line up against a certain formation, and Velus Jones is lined up against a safety or a linebacker, and you like that matchup, he may serve a purpose. He may serve a purpose. I'm not going to overstate that, but I do think that when coaches have these conversations, these kinds of things come up. Here's what is he different from than other guys who might be kept?
The problem is there's 5 or 6 plays a game that can decide a football game. The problem is he going to play? Are you going to put him on the field for 5 or 6 plays? And if he has any kind of success in those 5 or 6 plays, every time he comes on the field, they're going to be aware that he can damage you in those 5 or 6 plays.
I just
don't know that he'd get enough opportunity make an impact offense.
Possibly not, because you have a lot of weapons. You have a nice situation on your hands. But if he even gets somebody's attention, so you're worried. I can't imagine lining up against the Bears trio of receivers with Cole Kmet also on the field and Velus Jones and worrying about what Velus Jones is going to do. I think you're going to have it's a matter of priorities and who you're going to try to stop. That's why in that context, you could maybe see them exploiting a mismatch while everyone else is worried about everything else.
You know, Cordero Patterson is a guy that was a wide receiver drafted by Minnesota. Mm-hmm. He, for whatever reason, didn't seem to be able to track the ball in the air. That sounds familiar. He wasn't a very good wide receiver. He's a great return guy. Really could do some dangerous things on the return, had high-end speed, also 6'2", 220, big man. And he ends up in New England, and they move him to running back, and all of a sudden he's contributing on offense while also returning kicks for touchdowns. I think he's got like 20 touchdowns in his career.
Mm-hmm.
Big guy, and has a role on a team because he can produce like an unbelievable play. And then you look at a guy like Velus, and you're like, you know, he's a little bit shorter. He's not quite 6 feet tall. He's about 200 pounds. He's not 220. He runs a little bit faster. He can't catch the ball. you worry about his ability to field a punt. I don't think you could trust him to be the punt returner. So he's kind of got a one specific skill. And listen, you can last in the NFL with speed.
You certainly can.
There's no doubt about that.
You make a living that way.
But I don't know that you're going to get enough of an opportunity.
Maybe not.
I just wonder.
I won't be surprised if they keep him, but maybe not.
I wouldn't be stunned if they keep him, but I also wouldn't be stunned if they said, you know, whether it's DeAndre Carter can return punts and field goals or Dante Pettis or whomever it might be. I just don't know how many guys like that you can keep.
Well, I think one or the other with DeAndre Carter and Dante Pettis. I don't think you can keep both those veterans. Because it would be.
I don't know, you keep two or three. That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure you could.
You wonder about the running back committee. Kari Blassingame is a guy that, do you keep a fullback? Are you going to use him on occasion? You know, Borum's decision could trigger other roster decisions on the defensive line.
Sure.
There's a lot of things also that will go into the decision we're not privy to. Injuries.
That's it. We don't know how serious some of these injuries
are. How these guys practice, what their contract situations are. I was surprised when looking closer at the Larry Borum situation that he had an escalator that made him, you know, a $3 million man this year. That to me is something that.
Well, if he's healthy, you, as you know, he's a swing tackle. You could argue, well, he can also play inside. You know, you've had two different offensive linemen. That you don't know if your guards are going to hold up. And meanwhile, the guy you brought in to ensure that your guards hold up has got a shoulder, and you don't know if he's ready to go or how many games he might miss to start the season. I think you're right. I think we are not privy to all of the inside information on injuries that will determine some roster spots.
Nor do we know the devotion of Ryan Poles in this regime to – players they drafted. We can suspect things, but let's look at the linebacker position, for instance. Michael Baskerville is a undrafted free agent, right? He's not a draft pick. Mm-hmm. Does he get the benefit of the doubt that Noah Sewell will get? Probably not. Noah Sewell's a draft pick that no general manager wants to cut loose. You don't want to cut draft picks from your 53-man roster. But if Michael Baskerville had a better preseason, are you open-minded enough as a franchise or organization to say best player gets final spot?
I have to go look at this, but has Noah Sewell struggled to stay on the field?
He's had some injury issues.
See, now that to me would be the thing that I would take into account when I'm picking a final roster. I always want guys who are, especially among my backup players,
that are available, that are
contributing on special teams and are ready to step in if I need them.
What role and how heavily do you prioritize production in preseason games?
I'm not very high on.
Okay, see, I think that's interesting because a guy like, let's go to the secondary, which is loaded, the Bears' strongest position group. Reddy Stewart had as good of a preseason as you could have hoped for a kid from Troy coming into the NFL and having his first preseason. Two picks, pick six. He was active. He was relevant. He was all over the tape if you're watching preseason games.
He's
not going to make the team.
I got more talented players in the secondary than I have positions on my roster for them. That is a bad reality for a young player.
He's
like
a practice
squad
player.
I would sign with a practice squad. I'd try to develop him. All right, we got Coach Wannstedt. We're going to talk about this. We'll ask him. What's it like breaking a man's heart and ruining his life by cutting him? What is this day? How does it resonate for guys like Dave who have been in the league and then have to tell someone you're out of the league and have to put together? You got to make really hard decisions that are only based on what is your best football team. We'll talk about it next. It's Cut Down Day. It's Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score.
Dave Wannstedt, Bears head coach for 6 seasons.
The Bears.
The Bears.
Super Bowl champion.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah!
He has the greatest mustache you've ever seen.
Some say it's a symptom of manliness. Others a cause. The mustache.
When he hanging out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E.
Dustin, we're not going to waste airtime on that, okay?
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank
next
you very
question.
Much.
Dave Wunstead.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to have Coach Wunstead join us in studio, and what a day for it. It is cut down day. Dave, it's a tough day on the calendar because important day. Got to get down to 53, but as you well know, difficult to call guys in and say goodbye and to move on, but necessary.
It is, and I'll tell you what, guys, it's a lot easier today than it was back in the day when we only had, what, four, five, six practice squad guys, you
right,
know?
Right, right.
Now, I mean, you know, how many guys will they keep on their practice squad?
16.
16 guys. How many guys they got to cut?
Well, they're 37. It's from 90 to 53, but they've already...
They're at 78 or something, aren't they?
Yeah, they got to be pretty low. Yeah. They're 9 yesterday.
So half of these guys, they're probably going to keep, you know, and those guys know who they are. So it's a tough day. You know, I remember the first time that I was ever in the NFL, when we were at Dallas, we kept a coach who most Bears fans would recognize the name, Dick Nolan. He was the head coach at one time with the 49ers, head coach of the New Orleans Saints. He was at the time, going back now, Tom Landry's like right-hand man. So Jimmy kept him on the staff there. And it was the first cut-down day. And the way that you did it, the player went and saw Jimmy, then he came and saw the position coach, and then, you know, on and on down the list, trainers, physical. So I'm sitting in my office as the defense coordinator, and Dick walked in. He said, let me tell you something. He says, I know this is different for you. It's new for you. It's uncomfortable because there's guys that are going to get cut today that we all like and would want on this team. But let me give you some advice. When the player walks in and sits at your desk, the first thing you say to him is, what did the head coach tell you? He says, because if you don't, you are going to get yourself in a bind. And you know,
because you didn't want to contradict the head coach.
You know, it's so tough.
You don't want one of those.
Exactly. Yeah. And between Ryan Poles, I don't know how the Bears do it. Does Poles talk to him first or does Flus?
Right.
But the critical thing is, and more so in today's society, you better make sure that everybody's talking the same language.
Wouldn't you do it together? Would they be in the same room at the same time, the GM and the coach?
I guess they could. I never had that.
You never did that?
No, I never did that or anything.
Then it's up to the coach, right?
Yeah, it's up to the coach. I mean, you know, it depends on how the contracts are written, you know?
Right.
But, and you know, the other thing, too, is there's a lot of guys that majority of them know that they're probably going to get cut, you know? So I don't think there's any shockers in today's world with the 16 practice squad. But it's still difficult because they all have the hope that someone else is going to pick them up. And sure, does that happen? It does to some degree. But for most of them, it's the end of the road, and now it's time to start thinking about what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Would you cut Velus Jones?
I would try to trade him. I thought that's why they were playing him at running back and everything. To me, if they had any confidence in Velus Jones, why do you draft Scott last year? To me, they're kind of the same guys. Fast, a little bit undersized, quick as heck, both athletic. But, you know, you draft Scott in, what, the third round last year?
Yeah.
You know, out of Cincinnati?
I think it was the fourth round.
Fourth round. So they're
third round.
Yeah, so they're about the same. But, you know, to me, they're kind of the same guys. Unless they're down on Scott. But to me, why they were moving Velus around to running back, receiver, trying to give him the ball, I thought they were trying to showcase him a little bit. But with the new kickoff return rules and how things have changed there, I just don't see the value that he has on our team. Hmm. That's just my opinion, Errol.
Well, it's hard when you're a return guy that can only do one of the two returns. And I don't know that they would trust him to catch a punt, and that's always difficult. And we've talked about Dante Pettis before, and he can do both and has done so at a record-setting level in college. They got DeAndre Carter. I don't know who their primary punt returner is, but I don't think they have one guy doing both if they keep Velus Jones.
Yeah, and you know what? The guy's an athlete, a good player. I got nothing against him personally. I mean, I saw him put the ball on the ground too many times. It makes me nervous. And I'll tell you what, if they want to run these reverses, he's not going to carry the ball as a running back. This guy's going to get – that looks good in the preseason. But let me tell you something. If you're going to run reverses, I'm giving the ball to Odunze. Give him the ball on the reverse. You know, he might not be a step fast. He might be fast. I don't know what the times are and all that stuff. But give him the football on a reverse or whatever you want, and let him get the football. That's a great way to get him involved more, too, other than the passing game, in my opinion.
Whether it's Velus Jones or Noah Sewell, how hard is it for a general manager to cut players he drafted, and what role does that play in the decision?
It does, and it is. But I'll tell you what, Ryan Poles, to me, has proven that at the end of the day, he's going to give every guy a fair opportunity, but he wants to, he's going to keep the best players. You know, I think he's proven that he's not afraid to cut a guy or trade a guy away that he drafted that just didn't work out.
They've made two moves over the weekend. On Friday, they got themselves a pass rusher, and then, again, these are sixth-round pick moves. And then on Saturday, they trade for a defensive tackle and a seventh-round pick. So it's a swap of picks to get another body in here, an NFL-sized player. What does that tell you about what they're trying to get done? You know, they had talked about Matthew Judon, and they did not make that move, but they did make a move. Does that mean that they're not interested in Yannick Ngakoue, that they're not interested in another player? Are they done now with the defensive line? What was your take?
I hope they're done, personally. I mean, now I'm higher on Austin Booker than maybe most people are, but he falls into the category of a type of player that we drafted, recruited, Miami, everywhere I've been, that turned into be a great player, you know, and don't, I'm not comparing guys. Don't get me, because people will say you're out of your mind. But Jason Taylor was the same size, okay, when we got him. You know what I mean? And Jason never played any bigger than 235.
Wow.
Okay? I mean, his instincts and the things you don't coach, guys, that's what Jason had, his intelligence. And that's what I see in this kid. So I would get this kid in there, and maybe it's a half a dozen snaps, but I tell you what, that's a real, it's real curious how they came up with a pass rusher. You know, I mean, Ryan Poles, I mean, he has done a great job. We got to believe in him. But how does a guy that has 7 sacks a year the last 3 years, what's Seattle doing?
Scheme
they,
fit.
They changed scheme schemes.
Got
to
be.
They're going to a 3-4 from
I read that. I mean, is that really?
Excuse me, they're going to a 4-3 from a 3-4.
Yeah, wow. I mean, that's just football players are football players in my mind. And that's that could be a heck of a pick for them. You know, the defensive tackle, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, I like Dexter, and I like I like the guys that they have right now.
Billings,
yeah, Billings, and,
but Zach Pickens might be hurt. You know, that could be an acknowledgement that he's got an injury.
Yes, that might be, and they could put a shirt on him for a year or something. Who knows? But the pass rusher, that is very intriguing, because how did he get out there? And Ryan Poles got great value for him, and he could really be a guy that helps the Bears.
312 is the number, 644-6767. We got Coach Wanstead for another segment, then we'll get to your calls. But we want to ask about what this means for their defense. You know, how good is this defense from what Dave has seen? We'll talk about that a little bit next. And, of course, the quarterback is all anyone wants to talk about. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.